I don't know whether, yes, I guess I'm on. I'm in a quandary, because when I started to think, well, first of all, when James called me, and there were no grammatical errors on the phone, but when he first called me, but you can't check spelling on the phone either. But anyway, I said, no, you know, I don't want to be put in that position. I got out of classroom teaching because I got nervous before people, and some of the students were people, so. But then I thought, well, I suppose I can tell all the stories, you know, like Mr. Candy has told. But then I started to think, is that really what they want? And so I developed my 7-page presentation. And last night I said to someone, you know, I don't think this is really what they're going to want. And now I'm sure that's not what they want. So as Mr. Candy was mentioning these things, I was jotting down a number of things, which I will save to the end of the presentation. And I will read this as quickly as I can, all right? Because it is work, and I don't waste stuff like this, all right? I have better things to do with my time, like naps. All right, those of you who know me know that I dote on being organized and making good use of time. Therefore, please forgive me for reading what I've previously written out. You will allow me to cover more material. I can't believe I have been cut time-wise. Forgive me, Mr. Stegner. From an hour and a half for science classes to 15 minutes of reminiscences. Raise your hand if you remember Mr. Stegner. Oh, great. And you remember how he hated the word time-wise? All right. How about irregardless, Susan Pazitz? All right. Yeah. It's a strange feeling to look out and see some faces I really don't know that well. On the other hand, it's very rewarding to recognize many, many more whom I have taught or known in some other capacity. My recollections are primarily concerned with the science program, which may be why it's going to be so boring. But forgive me for my bias. I thought I would start with how I came to Indian Springs back in 1958. I was teaching at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, when out of the blue I got this letter, or was it a call, from a Dr. Armstrong, who invited me to fly down to Alabama to see his school. Raise your hand if you were here when Doc was. All right. I had never heard of Doc or ISS. Due to, whoops, Mr. Stegner, because of time restraints, I won't go into how Doc happened upon my name. Let's just say I was recommended by a professor at Cornell University who knew Dr. Crosby, who at the time was associate director of Springs. Raise your hands if you remember Dr. Crosby. Woohoo! Boy, you all are, no. Back from then, huh? I had no intention of changing schools, but thought a trip to a warmer clime at that time of year would be a nice break for me at someone else's expense. It must have been during my spring break because I never wanted to miss teaching my classes. In fact, during my entire teaching career, I only missed one day of teaching. And that day I was vomiting on a regular schedule. And I didn't think the students would pay much attention to what I was saying. When I arrived, Dr. Eller, the chemistry teacher who was leaving Springs, wasn't holding class. Raise your hand if you knew Dr. Eller. Fewer that time. The students were off from class, supposedly, to work on some assignment. As Dr. Eller showed me around the dorm circle, he would call into various rooms saying, "You're working on your chemistry, aren't you?" Of course, the answer was yes, but it was obvious to me they were just goofing off. The impression made on me was that I certainly didn't want to be associated with such a freewheeling institution. And in fact, I will interject one of my notes where I've written, which I've written borrowing Mr. Fleming's pen. He mentioned Jerry Lanning. The school newspaper came out with headlines, I think probably the first week I was there, "Lanning indicts faculty." I thought, where am I? Well, then I was taken to the Old Town Hall to observe a Glee Club rehearsal. Of course, when I entered, there was total chaos. Then Dr. Hoggard came in. Raise your hand if you remember Dr. Hoggard. Well, the atmosphere changed dramatically. Every student immediately sat forward on his chair, and for the entire period, never took his eyes off Dr. Hoggard. And the sound of the Glee Club, I was certainly impressed. And aside for those of you who knew Dr. Hoggard, when I first arrived at Springs, I asked Dr. Hoggard what the best church choir was in Birmingham. He answered that since he wasn't currently directing a church choir, it was probably Hugh Thomas's choir at First Methodist Church. I joined that choir and was blessed to come to know that amazing musician and person, Hugh Thomas. Anyway, flying back to Indiana, I thought if offered the job of teaching chemistry and physics, I would accept. That summer, during summer vacation, and this whole thing came to 13 minutes and 25 seconds. But anyway, just wanted you to know. That summer, during summer vacation, I was enrolled at Purdue University in several chemistry, math, and physics courses. Out of the blue again, I was contacted by Doc with the abrupt message that conveyed the idea of, enough of this messing around, I want you to come to teach chemistry and biology. Seems that after he had interviewed me, he interviewed Dick Jones for another open science position. Raise hands. Mr. Jones had written a chapter on light in the PSSC physics book. Doc thought it would be cool to have him on the staff. That's how I got shoved over into biology. I told Doc that I didn't have a degree in biology and that, in fact, I hadn't taken even one biology course in college. His reply, well. Teach something to the sophomores and call it whatever you want. It so happens that I had previously taken an independent study course with my major professor for my master's degree. What I worked on was a new approach to the teaching of biology. While I was at LaPorte, Indiana High School, I often talked to the biology teacher who complained that she had trouble teaching some units because the students had no understanding of chemistry or physics. My idea then was to put biology into the senior year and teach chemistry to the sophomores and physics to the juniors, giving them the background they would need to take senior biology course, which would contain much biochemistry and material where a knowledge of physics would be most helpful. I suggested to Doc that we move biology to the senior year. That gave me time during several summers to load up on biology courses. When it was time to teach biology, I had the same number of college credits in chemistry, physics, math, and biology. How many of you actually took biology from me in the senior year? Few, very few. I only taught it about 2 or 3 years, I guess. I hope you went on to become doctors. How many went on to become doctors? you can't win it all. Dick Jones went to Brown University one time to attend a symposium conducted by experts in biology education. The gist of the meeting was that biology teaching would be totally different in 10 years from what it currently was. They described what that vision was. At the end of one talk, Mr. Jones stood up and said, at this little private school in Alabama, we had been teaching such a biology course for several years. After a couple of years of this program, it became apparent that the sophomores were having trouble with the last part of the chemistry course when we would hit a lot of abstract theory. They just didn't seem ready for the material. That was when I hit upon another idea for the sequence of science courses. That was to initiate a program which had students taking 12 weeks each of biology, chemistry, and physics during the 9th, 10th, and 11th grades. This, of course, allowed me to teach the more difficult concepts of chemistry in the junior year. However, I felt there were many advantages of this program, two of which were the fact that each discipline of science now could build on what the students had been taught in the others, and that there would be a review of each of these sciences across 3 years instead of just one. I don't have time to elaborate anymore. In the senior year, we could then teach electives of one sort or another. This program was written up in The Science Teacher, which was the magazine of the National Science Teachers Association. Along the way, I managed to get double periods of science by alternating every other day with PE. I mention these things to give you some insight into the spirit of experimentation that I found here at ISS. It was an exciting time because we could be creative, and Doc was almost always receptive to trying new things. I felt that spirit of adventure and experimentation and reveled in it. Our experimental programs sometimes didn't seem to last long enough to find out how successful they were. We often discussed ways of reporting the progress, or lack of, that students were making. I can recall stacks and stacks of report forms in the storage room in the front office. We would come up with a new idea for a report form. Doc would have hundreds of these printed up. Then we would change. Result, another stack of forms soon also to become obsolete. To de-emphasize grades, we used anecdotal records at one point. We started using checks, check minuses, and check pluses on papers rather than grades. It didn't take the students long to equate whatever we did or said with letter grades. Apart from grades, we tried something called the Senior Independent Study Program. This, as best I can recall, lasted for perhaps a couple of years. Around the end of the first semester, seniors were allowed to choose an independent investigation they were interested in and a teacher to work with on that project. I believe this study lasted for maybe 2 weeks. The only reason I remember this at all is that I was thrilled that one of my students, Tom Byers, who was primarily a humanities person and now is professor of English at the University of Louisville, selected a topic in science. In fact, he did a detailed study of acetyl coenzyme A, with whom I'm sure you all acquainted. Show of hands for those who may have been involved in this program or who remember Tom Byers. Bill, good. Good. David, I see. I saw another hand up there somewhere. Then there was something we called concentration on call. It used to bother me that in the lab, students would be just getting into one of their personally designed experiments when the bell would ring and they would have to immediately stop work. This was not at all what a true scientist would do. So I wish that we had a bigger block of time. Recalling that in summer school, an entire year of a subject was covered in 6 weeks' time, I suggested to Doc that we might try out a new plan. So we used the four-hour time period in the mornings for concentration in one subject. It might have been chemistry for that 6 weeks. In the afternoon, subjects such as PE, foreign language, and math would meet every day in single periods. This was the on-call part of the program. I'm hazy concerning additional details, but some of you might recall. How many of you were here during that experiment? I see some of you out there who were here when I experimented with my completely wonderful grading system for advanced chemistry, but none of them remembers how I graded them. I don't remember. Who is there to, who can you call on? I probably have time for just a few other highlights. One very rewarding experience for a teacher was given to me by Stefan Thiessen. Who knows Stefan? Stefan Thiessen. If you know him, you know his brother Stuart. Anyway, in chemistry lab one day, I had different groups of students gather different sets of data. All this data was put on the blackboard. The assignment was to look at all the data, study it, rearrange it, reorganize it, and try to find a generalization that would fit it all together. They were not allowed to get help from any other source except their own mind. It had to be their own work. Well, Stefan's brother, Stuart, was downstairs. Stefan was upstairs and had been working for some time trying to piece everything together. Suddenly, Stuart heard this cry from upstairs, "Eureka!" Stefan had found the generalization and had experienced the thrill of discovery. What I had hoped could be accomplished was, and by someone who later became a violin performance major. Two final tales. Anyone remember Ricky Barnes? Okay. Ooh, Gilbert. Are you still farming? Well, for senior biology, I had asked Ricky, since he passed a meatpacking plant on his way to and from home, to pick up some pig plucks for use in a planned experiment for biology on Monday. Pig plucks, in case you don't know, are the hearts and lungs of pigs, which maybe even in the South they don't eat. I don't know. Can't forget my Yankee heritage. I think he came back to the campus early, which meant I had to do something with these pig plucks to keep them from spoiling. Either we didn't have a refrigerator or it was too small, so what to do? Well, old-timers used to preserve meat and brine. So I filled a big plastic garbage container with salt water and started to put the pig plucks into it. The air in the lungs kept the plucks from sinking. All I could think of doing was to fill brine to the top, put the cover on, and hold it down with a hydraulic jack that happened to be in the lab. Okay, all set for Monday morning in the big experiment, all right? On Monday morning around 7 o'clock, my usual time of getting to the lab, I opened the back door. I was almost knocked over by the horrible smell that greeted me. Then I was almost carried off by the swarm of flies that emerged. Checking the pig plucks, I found that the hydraulic jack was on the floor, the cover off, and the pig plucks on top were green and had maggots crawling all around in them. He had chicken salad for lunch. Anyway, the meat on the top wasn't thoroughly covered, apparently, and had started decomposing, forming gases, which had created enough pressure, see why you need to know biology, chemistry, and physics, to throw off the weight. Well, think of the treat that was then available to the flies. So there went my plans for Monday. Desperate to save what I could do, you know, desperate to save what I could for the experiment, I took these abominations to the sink at the front of the room, the lab, and started to scrub them clean of green and free of maggots. Mind you, I have a weak stomach, so you know this was a labor of love. I didn't tell the students about this, so the experiment went off without a hitch. The other story concerns an experiment for our unit on development in biology. One year we ordered male and female frogs. I wanted to be, you know, politically correct. I was off campus when the shipment arrived, but had asked Mrs. Richard Jones to get it for me, to put the box in her kitchen sink, kept some water dripping on the box so that the frogs would stay moist. Well, it so happens that the water dripping enlarged the air holes, so the frogs got out. They were all over her house. Dick Jones was not available. Unfortunately, I had come back on campus, so she called me. And she emailed recently, and she said that I was crawling all over the living room of their house looking for these frogs, and even into the fireplace. And she said, all this time I was laughing so hard I could hardly find the frogs. But that wasn't the end of it. When I finally got the box, or the new box, to the lab, I asked Eugene, who was my lab assistant before our beloved Mr. King. How many remember Eugene? Mr. King. Yeah. Well, Eugene opened the lid. Well, I warned him to be careful not to let the frogs escape en masse. So he opened the lid, and a frog jumped out. He panicked, let the box fall. Again, the frogs were on the loose. I yelled at him to help me catch them. His response was to stand aside in horror, saying, "They gives you warts." I finally rounded up what I thought were all the frogs, but for several years we continued to find frog skeletons in strange places in the lab. The purpose of the frogs. Without going into sexual matters, let's just say that we injected the female in order to get her to ovulate. Then we fertilized the eggs. Amazingly enough, we were successfully able to follow the development of the eggs through to the final result. However, the next year, I couldn't get the female to ovulate. I squeezed and squeezed to strip the eggs of the petri dish, but no eggs. We won't talk about the bulging eyes. I suppose I got a call from the animal cruelty. Anyway, it was a failure. The experiment had been so great that first year that I decided to try again the next year. But to ensure success, I decided to use a veterinarian to make the injection. Picture this. The vet's office. Little old lady sitting inside with her cats and drooling dogs. In I walk carrying my frog. Talk about feeling noticed. Result, the vet had no more success than I had been having. Guess he didn't treat many frogs. So I never attempted that experiment again. And I had ended originally, but I, you know, I timed you. So I had ended this way originally. There are many other notes I made of things I wanted to tell you, but time has run out. The only thing I can suggest to you is to bury me in your time capsule. But I'm not through. We have to tell some Mr. Cameron stories, who was known by another name. But anyway, it was one of these faculty meetings that he was talking about, you know. There were three benefits for retiring. I won't go into what those three things were. But anyway, Mr. Cameron always talked about how flexible the PE department was. And he used to draw this triangle, you know, that showed the class sports, you know, and then we had the intramurals up a little high, and the pinnacle was the interscholastic sports. Well, Bernie Deering was sitting next to me. How many remember Bernie? And Bernie had an unusual sense of humor. And so all of a sudden in the meeting, he nudges me, and I look over, and here is this pyramid that was all flexible and flexed out of shape. Well, I almost broke up and almost ruined the meeting by laughing out loud. All right, Durf rallies. And Mr. Lusko, one of the classic things is the time you stood up and said, we have a new student named John Duff. And apparently you don't know what his room is, because last night everybody came to their front door and kept going, Duff, Duff, Duff. Love that story. But anyway, when the Glee Club went to Europe in 68 and 70, how many went on those tours? Do you remember the Durf rallies we had on the top of Mont Pilatus? And we got all those echoes? You know, Durf, 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 Durf. And somebody had printed up Durf signs. So when I went down to visit my parents in Florida, all along the whole route down to Florida, there were Durf signs printed on the highway, you know, pasted on things. All right, I mentioned, you know, that when I got to Indian Springs and I was indicted along with the faculty by Jerry Lanning, I set my clock radio that first day to wake up. How many remember Duke Rumore? And then slopping or whatever it was, Golden Eagle table syrup. I woke up to that and this crummy music that he played, and again I thought, what have I got into? Then my last story was, again, a Mr. Cameron story. The faculty was asked in one faculty meeting to explain the philosophy of our teaching and all the rest of this. So I went into all of this stuff in science, you know, about how things change. So if you teach, for instance, how an ice box works today, that you use this big block of ice, you know, and all this happens, you know, and then tomorrow they come in with compressors and all this, you know, you can't teach this sort of stuff. You need to teach the fundamentals, and no matter what comes along, people are going to be able to understand it, you know, because they know the fundamentals. So I go through all of this stuff, you know. And afterwards, Doc said, well, are there any questions? You know, so this big hand went, you know, like, hey, fella. My shoulder was broken about 15 times in the dining hall. But anyway, this big hand goes up and he says, well, what I want to know is, this summer I took a bunch of basketball players to New York for whatever it was, you know. And he said, we had a flat tire on the way. Not one of those guys could fix a flat tire. What are you doing about that in your science classes? That's it.